Okay, 3, 2.
3, 2, hit it!
It's time to double down with Max and Stacy on Sputnik Radio. Today we're looking at red herrings and black swans in the oil market as OPEC plans to meet next week to discuss an output pact. Oversupply abounds, prices are up and down, but mostly down, and Iran has been brought in from the cold. It's getting hot in here, Stacy.
It's certainly getting hot in the oil markets, Max. Up and down, up and down, up and down. Up 10%, down 10%, up 6%, down 20%. So major oil producers, OPEC and Russia, are meeting April 17th to discuss an output pact. They're going to supposedly freeze production. But Iran says that they want to recover their output to pre-sanction levels. And in fact, Iran's oil minister last weekend said that the nation's oil production had actually risen further in March, which heading into this meeting in Doha can't be good for those like Venezuela, of course, who want a cut. But Saudi Arabia says they will not freeze production until Iran does.
You know, the whole oil market is quite dynamic in a number of different ways. You know, we'll bring in our guest in a moment, but to get his take as an expert. But from my observation is you've got a global market. It's the biggest market in the world. It's very tied in with the global credit market because it takes a lot of money to be in the oil business. And we have a new element here on the demand side because you have now a genuine threat from some of these new technologies, like electric cars, for example, that are being talked about in the context of a diminished demand for oil and new technologies and things like that. And the geopolitical dimension, of course, is what drives almost the entire global geopolitical conflict and skirmishes are usually about oil. And now we've got Iran. It just brings in yet another piece of a very, very, very dynamic puzzle.
Well, I'm going to get to the headline that we have this week, but I do want to mention that speaking of oil markets, many people have argued that in a true market like this, the swing producer should be Saudi Arabia, which is the lowest cost producer. But it has been actually acting like the frackers from America, which are high cost producers, are the swing producers. But some say there's a battle going on between Saudi Arabia and the U.S. frackers, which is why they're trying to destroy them. But my headline from this week is from Reuters, and they say Iran more red herring than black swan for oil. So they don't believe that Iran is actually going to cause a black swan supply event. Their take is that the threat from Tehran looks like a red herring. Iran is keen to win back customers for its crude in Europe and Asia, but still faces an uphill struggle to displace other suppliers unless it heavily discounts shipments. Even then, the Islamic Republic may still struggle to find brokers to underwrite its additional cargoes or banks to act as intermediaries. That's what you say. It's a credit-driven event. Will they get the letters of credit for their shipments?
Well, it didn't make sense that Iran would just dump a lot of oil out there. I mean, because they want to try to get the best prices possible as anyone else. So they've got to be play the game to some extent. But again, it's against all these other major factors, and you end up with quite an interesting dynamic situation.
Well, I say we now turn to Chris Cook, who is a former oil market regulator and a regular visitor to Iran, and actually has spoken to people in the oil market recently since Iran has come in from the cold.
In from the cold? Brr. It was cold out there. Indeed. But can they just restart the oil-producing engines in such still frigid conditions? Chris, what do you think of this notion that Iran is all red herring, not so much black swan, that they can ramp up production much even if they wanted to and think their meeting in Doha will result in output pact?
Yeah, very interesting time in the oil markets right now with the meeting coming up. I think it's more apparent than real. I mean, it's at the end of the day, you've got Russia and you've got the Saudis agreeing to freeze production at the maximum rate they can pump. I mean, for me, that's not going to do a great deal to reduce supply onto the market, you know. So if the Iranians do start supplying the market, and Stacey's quite right, that there's big difficulties. You didn't even mention insurance. Just shipping the stuff has been a big difficulty for the Iranians, who they, you know, never mind getting paid, you've got to ship it. So they haven't been able to put as much oil onto the market as people thought they would. But they do have quite a bit of spare capacity, not just in the very short term, but in the medium term as well. And I think, you know, within a year, you could see them adding 1 million barrels into the day. But into the market. They're not going to do that, I don't think, if to do so would crash the market price. So there's some interesting dynamics, as you say, Mark, Max, on this.
Yeah, so Chris, of course, the sanctions were there for a while. How difficult is it, or am I understanding this correctly, to kind of restart the whole industry up again? Because that equipment is not needs to be maintained pretty vigorously. And just to ramp it up to supply levels, where are they in that process? Were they able to just flick a switch and start pumping, or do they kind of have to go through a process of re-equipping?
There's a huge, it's a colossal amount of investment is needed into Iran. And the Americans are as interested in that as the Europeans. But the Europeans have got like 18-month start. And of course, because of the crazy politicians in the U.S., nothing's going to be happening in Iran from the U.S. end for a long, long time, if ever. So, when I was last in Tehran, there were 150 French business people visiting, and they weren't doing it for charity.
Hey there, this is Max Keiser. I'm with Stacey Herbert. We got a new show here in Sputnik called Double Down.
Well, that's exactly the point, because Donald Trump had a famous moment during this campaign season on CNBC, I believe it was. And he said that this is crazy that we've ended sanctions in Iran, and Iran goes and buys 100-something Airbus. They should be buying Boeing. And the presenter on the news program said, well, we're not allowed to because Congress does not allow U.S. companies to trade with Iran. So, as you say, a lot of Europeans are getting a massive head start, and whether or not Congress ever ends the prohibition against American companies from dealing with them.
Well, the U.S. is having its clock cleaned, as they say, by the Europeans at the moment.
Right, Chris, you mentioned the capital needed, huge capital requirements, and this, of course, is tied into the global banking industry, and the global banking industry is going through its own problems in terms of trying to recapitalize itself and resorting to unorthodox monetary policies like negative interest rate and this type of thing. But I noticed with particular interest that Saudi Aramco, the huge player in Saudi Arabia, is thinking about taking part of itself public on the exchanges in what would be a $2 trillion offer, several times bigger than even the biggest company in the world, Apple Computer. What does that tell us about what's going on here, if anything, Chris?
Well, put it this way, Max, I wouldn't buy anything the Saudis are selling. And at the end of the day, you remember what Yamani said, that the Stone Age didn't end because of a shortage of stones. And the Oil Age isn't ending for a shortage of oil. It's because the cost of extracting it is rising rapidly. And people are just not, I think we've reached a point, and it's a sort of major inflection point in markets. I call it peak demand. And what it's down to, Max, is energy cost on the one hand, that the cost of extraction is rising rapidly. If you actually see what's happened with the U.S. fracking, they increase production by 5 million barrels a day. They also reduce consumption, and you touched upon renewables yourself. They reduce consumption by 2 million barrels a day. And, I think we've essentially got a cap now on the oil market price. Since fracking pretty much ceased in the U.S., the diesel demand has reduced by 20%, and that's because of all the energy that was being used just to frack. And you have a similar equation in with tar sands in Canada, huge energy cost to producing the energy. So the limiting factor is the energy cost of extracting energy is rising. And also, on the other hand, you've got renewables getting cheaper all the time. And the really big point, Max, is what I call negative barrels. The more expensive gas gets and oil gets, the more profitable it is to save it. And that's precisely what, in Iran, when I was last there, they're spending $100 billion in the next 5 years on energy efficiency measures, right? That is the next big thing. You heard it first here, Max. Nega barrels.
Mega or nega?
Nega.
Nega.
That's
an interesting. Well, actually, in South Dakota, by the way, they were, or North Dakota, I'm sorry, they were giving away barrels of oil, apparently, because it was more expensive for them to store it than because of storage, the
sure.
capacity is over. But I want to also talk about, you mentioned that there is a huge amount of investment needed. Mm. But in the U.S., because of fracking, because of the crash in the price, tens of billions of dollars have just gone up in smoke. Now, that presumably could have been money that could have been invested in a more sensible location like Iran.
Well, my theory is, and take it for what you will, that the whole U.S. fracking industry was a very intelligent energy security play by the U.S. government, that they essentially allowed the Saudi capital to support the price for 5 years. I think you know I said 3 years, 4 years ago, the price would collapse to $45 when QE ended, and it did. And in my view, the U.S., for energy security reasons, raised the price so that they have this swing production, which they can kick in. It's high-cost swing production, but it's basically given them energy security. And, you know, basically, to use Lyndon Johnson's phrase, the Saudis are no longer inside the tent pissing out. They're outside the tent pissing in.
Right. Well, so you would claim that that program has worked pretty well. Now, you mentioned something that is fascinating, in that when this peak demand that you talk about, and the fact that the price of extracting the oil is rising. Mm-hmm. It's a very interesting mix, because the peak demand would suggest certain deflationary pressures, but mm-hmm. the cost of extracting on the upswing would suggest inflationary pressures. And then you have the renewables, which are kind of pressuring margins on the on all of the industries, which, again, that's a deflationary input. So how do you reconcile, you know, this is a question we've been talking about for a long time now, the inflation versus deflation. It sounds like overall we're talking about deflation, but what are your thoughts there?
Well, it's really interesting, isn't it? I mean, on the one hand, costs are reducing so that, you know, people will have more money to spend. But then at the end of the day, they're just using it to pay off debt. Warren Mosler makes a very good point, which is that actually the big thing is that essentially $2 trillion a year of petrodollars are no longer coming into the market. And what that is doing is basically there isn't the capital. The capital is no longer out there to invest. You know, petrodollars, it's not so much cash, it's capital, right? It's capital that can be invested in any project. So the banks essentially are being starved of deposits, okay? And this is a colossal deflationary aspect that you're seeing. All of this economic rent that was being extracted by producers, and it's not just in oil, of course, it's in all of the, you know, all of the commodities which have collapsed in price. It's essentially taking demand for capital expenditure, you know, capital expenditure out of the global markets, and it's a huge factor.
It's Double Down with Max and Stacey.
Oh yeah, it's a new show on Sputnik Radio.
Well, that's the conundrum that many financial analysts and economic analysts in America are noting, is that we have cheaper gasoline at the petrol station, we have cheaper commodities, and yet the economy seems to be still struggling.
It's so going to get a lot worse. Mm.
It's going to get worse. Okay. Yeah. And part of that is because of the CapEx. Basically, the only industry doing CapEx for the last decade has been oil. Everybody else is using their money to buy back their shares.
Yeah, but you see, that CapEx came from petrodollars, because this is exactly what happened in 1973. The petrodollars were deployed in investing in future oil production, which enabled energy security. It happened in 1973. It's happened again, and it was a very smart move. The oil producers get the blame for something the U.S. wants to do for energy security reasons. Very smart move by the U.S.
Okay, so final wrap-up. Do you see an output freeze actually happening April 17th in Doha? Do you see anybody actually getting on board that?
Well, I think, what difference does it make? If you freeze at your maximum production, it's purely cosmetic. You know, if you're pumping as much as you can, who gives a damn whether you freeze it or not, you know? So it's cosmetic in my view.
So the big takeaway here, Max, is nega barrels.
Yeah, what is it again, nega barrels? Explain that again briefly.
Basically, investing in carbon fuel savings. You know, the more expensive carbon fuel gets, the more profit there is in saving it. It's that simple.
Efficiency.
And, yeah.
Efficiency. Yeah, yeah, yeah. James Watt, the famous engineer, went to the Cornish tin mines 250 years ago, and he said, right, you can use my new steam engines for free. All I want is a third of the coal you save. Okay? That was the first smart carbon fuel trade.
All right, so disruption comes to the oil market. Well, that's it for this episode of Double Down with me, Max Kaiser, and Stacey Herbert on Sputnik Radio. Thanks to our guest, Chris Cook. Until next week, bye, y'all.